On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Tall Can Sports Podcast on the Tall Can Audio Network. You can check out all your favorite Tall Can Audio shows at www.tallcanaudio.com. Interact with the show at Tall Can Audio on Twitter or facebook.com/tallcanaudio. And if you're one of those super cool people, you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/tallcanaudio. As you can tell, I'm still a little under the weather. That's why there hasn't been a whole lot of content around here since Grey Cup week, I guess. I'm a little grateful that this didn't hit me until after that. But a few things I wanted to touch on here that surround a little Canadian football, that surround some junior hockey. And when that's the case, there is only one person to contact, and that is the kiss-stealing, wheeling-dealing, jet-flying, limousine-riding, it's your boy, Nate Sager. How's it going, man?
Yeah, I'm ready to raise hell.
It sounds like it. You're all over that, man. How you been, man? Things are cool down in the T-dot, as the cool kids would say 10 years ago.
I think I'm in a good mood. I mean, I had to watch the University of Western Ontario win the Vanier Cup, and it didn't, like, make me sad. So I think I'm maturing.
Okay. We had a chance.
I just contrasted that. I mean, not to take you down the university sports rabbit hole, because
someone should.
But yeah, I just thought back 2009. Like, I would have, like, just died if, you know what, Queens. That was the year, you know, my alma mater, hometown school.
Yeah.
Queens won the Vanier, and they had to beat Western twice. Twice that season in the process, and beat Laval and beat Calgary. If they had, like, if that had not happened, I would have just been beside myself. And then I'm just thinking, you know, here's Western. And it's just like, almost like, okay, you can just win one already. This is like the 96 Yankees. Just, you know, just enough. I've had just enough of you blowing it at the end of the year. Or, like, you know, stepping on your own dicks, basically.
Well, and you know what? Before we go anywhere else, on our Grey Cup preview show, a certain somebody called the finish to the Grey Cup almost perfectly. I was blown away because at the time we did our own preview show here, which you and some of the other friends of the show gave your predictions. I couldn't even remember the name of the kicker that you said would win it in the same building he won it at the Yates Cup. And it couldn't have come out any more perfectly, man. You had it on the nose.
Almost.
Wow.
I think I said a 2-point win, and the Argos won by 3.
But still. Oh, what's his name there?
Up. Yeah, Liram Hirilahu.
Yeah, there's no way you can expect me to remember that name. Liram Troy Polamalu kicks the field goal to win the game, man, in the same building, just like you said would go down.
Well, it was funny, you know, you want to not talk about betting on sports. Like, I don't bet a lot.
Right.
But right, just on a whim before the game, I think I said, okay, I'll take the Argos to cover. Okay, I'll take the Argos to win, and I'll take the over on Bo Levi Mitchell interceptions, because the over-under on that was just 0.5. So basically,
oh, shit.
One or none.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with like 5 minutes left in the game, I was losing on all three bets and then ended up winning because CFL.
Yeah, unbelievable. What did you, you know, I want to get into some junior hockey here with you in a second, but what did you think overall? For me, the first half was kind of a dog's breakfast in terms of being able to move the ball, although Calgary certainly did it better than Toronto. I think at one point, Toronto was... if you'll excuse me there, Ricky Ray was like 1 for 9, 19 yards or something like that. And they'd had that one specialty or the 109 yard play at one point. The first half to me wasn't particularly entertaining. But I think what everybody's going to remember is that finish, right? Like, I don't know if it was the greatest game you'll ever see. It might've been one of the more exciting ones though. Like it,
yeah, I think it goes down as one of those ones that was one of the tensest, you know, ones that was just so hard fought, and it maybe not a classic, but you think, you know, Calgary, you know, everything to lose really, because, you know, it's like, I mean, now they've got, you know, the choking dogs label affixed to them until they win one. But when in reality, they played two really close Grey Cups and just happened that they didn't get that someone else got the breaks or made the big play or whatever.
Well,
we're talking about a loss in the last minute of the game, and then the year before in Toronto against the Red Blacks,
yeah,
a loss in overtime where Calgary could have won, scored a touchdown in the...
Well, you have a better memory for these sorts of things than I do. I don't remember, was it 92 or 93? I think it was 93, that game, Dave Stewart versus Curt Schilling. It went extra innings. It was something stupid like 15-12.
The Blue Jays.
Yeah, Blue Jays and...
15 game?
Yeah.
Game five?
Was
game
that,
four of the 93 World Series?
That was 90. And I can remember and I can remember seeing Dave Stewart interviewed afterwards. And his quote, I can remember word for word, was, "That's a beautiful game right there. Maybe not a well-pitched ball game, but that's a beautiful game." And that's kind of what I thought of when I, you know, at the end of this... Was that the best executed, most perfectly played football game I've ever seen? No, it wasn't. Was it one of the more exciting games I've ever seen? In the end, yeah, that's how it turned out to be, right? Like,
yeah, just, I mean, again, like I say, Calgary, choking dog label, Argos, you know, I mean, obviously a win could be something that really does help the franchise regain traction in the market. And, I mean, they just refused to go away. And
yeah,
when they earned a break, you know, they managed to, you know, force that fumble from Kamar Jordan, who I think took way too much blame for it.
Well, on camera, his teammates were tearing him up.
Yeah, which was ridiculous.
That was bullshit.
Yeah, I think it was Marquay McDaniel.
Yes, it was.
If you watch the fumble return, McDaniel stops running when Cassius, the Toronto defensive back who scooped up the fumble, is only at about the 25-yard line.
Right.
And McDaniel stopped chasing him, which considering the field conditions, is ridiculous.
Anyone honestly.
Fell or caught a cleat or whatever.
No, it's true.
I mean, I never played a down of football in my life, but it's the ultimate don't point fingers sport, because there are 24 moving parts and there are on each play and there are 150 plays in the game. So who's to say, you know, there was a great saying by the guy who wrote North Dallas 40, Peter Gent, saying the losing play is never that obvious.
Yeah, that's a great quote. Actually,
yeah, because he always talked about the story, and again, going way down the football third hole here. But yeah. I mean, he played with the Cowboys when they, right in the era. Now everyone sort of dimly remembers. There's that famous Cowboys Packers Ice Bowl where, you know, Bart Starr scored the winning touchdown in the finals.
Bart.
After 15 glorious seasons, the Green Bay Faithful did football. But anyways, the year before they had played in the championship, and I think it was Green Bay beat Dallas that time too, but it was like an interception in the end zone that sealed it. And everyone sort of focused on, you know, a couple of mistakes the Cowboys made, but Peter Gent was always like, well, the real losing play was that I dropped a pass in the third quarter.
Right.
And result, we had to punt out of our end zone, and Green Bay got the ball on our 40-yard line, and they, you know, scored quickly. That's why we lost. We were, because that put us down 14. He's like, I lost the game for us. He wrote that like an essay about this like 30 years later. He's like, I'm still haunted by that play. That was the losing play.
Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, so yeah. I mean, yeah, so again, like just a game where the Argos just hung around and they made the plays. It sort of reminded me of maybe 1994, that BC Baltimore Grey Cup, because no one gave
on ESPN 2 that game at all.
Yeah, I know. I tweeted out the link today.
It's true.
I don't know how that came up. It just came up in my YouTube suggestions. I didn't even know this existed. I didn't know ESPN 2 did that game. And
if you're a football fan at all of Canadian football, and we'll retweet it, check out Nate's Twitter or check out our Twitter. You can follow Nate at N8SAGER. Really just, I don't know. To me, it's just one of those things, right? Watching Grey Cup football on ESPN2 with the commentary and the graphics, everything. It's kind of neat. Nate found that and tweeted it out today.
Yeah,
so
was, yeah, Gus Johnson, who's, you know, gone on to be a famous play-by-play guy.
Honestly,
and, Mike Mayock is a pretty big game commentator. They're calling it, and it's not like they're, and it's not like, haha, look at us, we're stuck in the Grey Cup here. And they're like,
they're into it. Yeah.
And I think it all the time. I think I only heard like once did they stop to explain a Canadian rule. I didn't watch the whole clip.
But right.
Meanwhile, I was just thinking like, God, the TSN guys, they usually have to explain something six times a quarter. Like thinking people don't get it. The only time they stopped to explain something was like the point out they never mark the ball inside the 1 yard line. It's always put down on the one.
Right.
Because the defense has to be a yard off the ball.
Yeah.
The only time I heard one. So it's just like, yeah, they're not, you know, adding anything. Oh, yeah, they play three downs up here. But the reason it reminded me of that, because, like, no one gave BC a chance in that game. And I think the only people who really thought the Lions could win, because that was during the CFL's U.S. experiment. And
yeah. Baltimore
had an all-American roster, whereas BC had the traditional half and half.
Well, it's so funny because the starting quarterback there for BC, Ken Austin, who obviously went on to, you know, CFL and Ole Miss and whatever, right? But it's just... It's funny. You're almost looking at this whole other world of, like you said, American expansion and on American television. And I know the CFL every now and then still gets its moment in the sun on ESPN 8, the Ocho, or whatever they might be doing down there. I can remember living with my buddy back in, it might have been 08, 09. And the only reason I had a chance to see this commercial was we had the old NHL Center Ice. Before it was online, it was on TV. And so he was a Blues fan. And so we're watching the Blues versus the Avalanche on Altitude Sports out of Denver. And they ran this commercial in one of the intermissions. It's like, hard-hitting Canadian or hard-hitting football from north of the border. And it's like Altitude Sports is picking up CFL football. And it was this weird thing, like, that they were painting it as this alien sport that no one had ever heard of. And so just to see Canadian football on ESPN of any kind was kind of strange. And so that was a sweet find by you there on YouTube.
Frequent punting, missed field goal returning madness.
The Rouge. Yeah. No, it was great. I want to move on a little bit here to something that I know is always interesting to you, although, it's certainly interesting to me. And why don't you correct me if I'm wrong here. As a junior hockey guy who follows it year-round, who knows more about junior hockey than most of us will ever know, am I wrong maybe in suggesting that maybe resenting is the wrong word, but that you almost dislike the World Juniors because it's like everyone else kind of moving in on this thing that for 2 weeks a year, we're all experts on junior hockey and then no one pays attention again until the World Juniors. Would that be a fair statement?
I've oscillated a bit on that. Like first it's like, yeah, it's annoying. There is annoyance. Like, you have the NHL guys who are, you know, sort of come in to cover it and then sort of act like they know who these guys are.
Right.
They really don't. It's like, do they know whether someone plays for Oshawa or Ottawa? Do they know that, you know, that it's the Niagara Ice Dogs and not the Niagara Falls Thunder, which is a team that hasn't been around for 20 years. it does get a little bit, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, you know, I mean, it's that casual fan engagement that takes something, you know, beyond its reach. But it's something that's completely apart from the, you know, the CHL and the experience of going to like an OHL game and
right.
Owen Sound or Guelph or something. Like, it's catering to a completely, you know, different, you know, market and a completely different price point. It's gotten so big when it when it's in Canada, and I actually think it's gotten way too big.
I kind of agree with that, right? And there's a certain amount of
I think the last two in North, I guess in Canada last year with Montreal, Toronto, and the I guess 2 years earlier with Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah,
in that sense, I sort of showed that it. I think it had kind of hit.
Oh, it sucked. Like, can we get this shit back into Red Deer or something? Right, like.
Well, hopefully, you know, 2 years from now, it's Vancouver and Victoria. That's a little bit more realistic to me.
Ah, man, but only barely, right? Like, Vancouver is still...
Yeah, the second rink in Victoria is like 6,000 seats. It's a WHL rink, but I mean, who knows what the price point
will yeah. be. And that's the problem, isn't it?
That's a buzzword, I mean, but that's becoming a problem with the Memorial Cup, too, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah, you know, and I think...
I think it's $800 for a ticket package to the Memorial Cup this year.
Like, to me, and we've talked about it on this show before. So, yeah,
it is kind of frustrating that it's gotten away from
you
know, the people who actually watch these guys play all year.
Well, like, for me, as a guy, I always said over and over and over, if the World Juniors were ever in my backyard, this is my favorite sporting event of the year. I want to go. And then Toronto gets it, but they're splitting it with Montreal. And then Montreal, and they're splitting. I'm not doing that. I'm not giving you money for half a tournament. And I'm not going to Buffalo to give money to USA Hockey and for one of those games to be outside, and that's a gong show in itself. I don't know when you watch
call it a fair tournament,
right?
There's going to be an outdoor game.
Well, like, and technically Canada and the USA shouldn't even be in the same pool. Like, they had to ask the IIHF, well, we won't sell out the game if it's not Canada. So what? Then don't do it. Like, that's, to me, this is a, I don't know, like, to me, all the things, when you watch those classic highlights and Paul Romanuk's doing the commentary, and it's way, the crowds in Red Deer, right? The crowds in Brandon, man, I don't know if it's ever been in Brandon, right? But those sorts of cities in Saskatoon and Regina and what, I don't know, there's something kind of cool.
Those are the cities that really made it.
Deer, right? Like, all these sorts of things.
Red Deer in the mid-90s, Halifax in 2003. Winnipeg,
that was a great tournament in Halifax. They couldn't have supported it any better. Like, to me, that was the glory days.
The Metro Center, yeah. To me, that was where the tournament really had the right...
Right. I'm totally...
The right staging and the right proportion, but I mean, as they say, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered, and... I mean, when I guess really, I mean, Vancouver doing the Vancouver tournament in 06 really showed, okay, this can be a huge money maker. And I mean, that was the one that was kind of right after the 05 one with that stacked Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, that was the Grand Forks team.
They sort of had to, their tournament. Had a basically a captive audience because there was no NHL.
Right.
All that.
Man, and that team was loaded.
Yeah, and they just smashed everyone in Canada. They hadn't won for a few years.
Right.
Obviously, you know, like I say, I mean, I like the whole two city model. I think it was okay, Regina and Saskatoon. Okay, that makes sense. You know, so it's gotten bigger now. You can't just play the whole thing in Saskatoon anymore. But those two cities are about 3 hours apart. At least they're in the same province. And I covered the Calgary/Edmonton one in 2012. And, you know, that was fine. But at the same time, yeah, you're getting half the tournament.
Yep.
And it also felt like Canada was in the Edmonton group for the first round, and it felt like they just completely lost momentum when they had to go to Calgary
for the
semifinal that they ended up losing 6-5 to Russia when I guess in the semifinal they ended up settling for a bronze medal.
Phew.
Well, that was fun to actually be there for a final that Canada wasn't in because you just
I mean, was that the really was that the Zibanejad goal in overtime.
Yeah, it was. The Mika Zibanejad 1-0 in overtime.
Yeah. That was wild.
Akhrov was the goalie for Russia, and he stopped something like 57 shots.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I just remember one point looking up, the shots were like 41-4 or something.
It's kind of like tonight's Leaf game.
hey, they won, right?
It's true, they did. Yeah, you know what? It's just one of those things, and I like, sort of...
It's just gotten too big. It's just gotten too big.
Well, and like this year again, and they did it a couple years ago... There's a part of me, and I know this makes me one of those people, there's a part of me that kind of hopes this thing in Buffalo, and it won't, But there's a part of me that hopes it falls on its face. I don't want to keep supporting an NHL-size rink for the World Juniors in another country that Canada props up. Like, I just, we're doing it wrong. This isn't what this tournament should be. And
if
I love
it. If it's going to be a real thing in the States, you have to play it somewhere.
At least can you get as far south as Columbus, Ohio, right? Could you just get off the border once and see if it'll work? And I know they did at one point, like it was Boston, like that's super far south somehow or whatever. And that was a failure.
Try a Sunbelt city that people would want to go to
Tampa. Tampa put in a bid for this one and didn't get it, obviously, but I don't know. There's just something about flooding across the border to fill Ralph Wilson Stadium or whatever the hell it's called now, and with Canadians to pay the bills for USA Hockey and an outdoor. Fair,
Canadians pay the bills for the bills too. So
yeah, okay, fair enough.
Just the fines for all the open alcohol citations.
Yeah, all right, that's true. You know what? But it's just one of those things where we're going in the wrong direction and it's bad enough that we are responsible for it up here. I don't want to help be responsible for it somewhere else. I didn't have a problem with it in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I'm sure they would do just fine with it if they went back to Massachusetts now. They would do fine with it if they went back to Minneapolis now. Do we have to keep going to Buffalo so the GTA floods across the border and pays the bills? Like, to me, it's...
Yeah, it's like Buffalo had it already.
Yeah, exactly.
The only good thing about it then was three games a day were at the Sabres Arena.
Yep.
So it was easier to follow. But now I guess they have a second.
Yeah.
That Harbor Center or whatever it's called. So we'll probably get, I guess they'll get two.
They'll get the B division or whatever's going to happen there now that they've pulled Canada into the same pool as the U.S. Did you get a chance to look at Wednesday afternoon, Canada announced their 32-man roster for training camp, and it was done on TSN like an Olympic team roster, just to further illustrate how big and out of control this has gotten. The guys going to camp were announced on TSN today. Did you get a chance to look at that? Anything stand out to you in terms of guys getting invited that you didn't think would, guys not getting invited that you thought might?
I pride myself on the fact I'm usually not too shocked on any omissions. I know a lot of people were reacting to Owen Tippett. I mean, he played in the NHL this year as an 18-year-old with Florida before getting returned to Mississauga in the OHL. He wasn't invited.
Right.
But at the same time, it wasn't surprising because 18-year-old scorers, offensive – I mean, not that Tippett doesn't play any defense, but usually 18-year-olds like that, they're usually the – you know, the sort of the first one out. I mean, I remember Max Domi was left off the team.
Yeah.
Left off the selection camp roster as an 18-year-old, but when he was 19, he came back and he was one of their, you know, top six guys. So yeah. that didn't really surprise me too much.
Yeah, I think, was that not Reinhardt, Domi, and Duclair was actually the top line ahead of McDavid?
Yeah. And that sort of freed up McDavid to be on the second line.
Yeah.
And, you know, sheltered him a little and they had that great 1-2 punch going on that team 3 years ago that won the gold medal. So it wasn't too surprised. I mean, I guess when you're looking where these players are coming from, in fact, there's only three players from the whole QMJHL on the selection roster. It isn't a shock because you're starting to look, you know, when you go and look at the, when you start this year, you start pouring over the scoring leaders in the queue, it's all like, wow, it's all imports or overage players. I mean, it's just, that's the kind of league where the league has kind of gone in the last few years.
Right.
And I feel like there might be the only QMJHL guy might be Drake Batherson, who's a Senators prospect who plays for Cape Breton.
And he's lighting it up.
Yeah, he's been lighting it up, and he's probably, you know, 13th forward material.
Yeah, power play guy maybe.
Yeah, sort of. You know, if a line's not working, you drop him in there. But I mean, to me, that's just a reflection of how much I think hockey, you know, development hockey has just gone to such extremes in Ontario and in a lot of Western Canada, and that hasn't happened to the same extent in Quebec and the Maritimes.
What do you think that is? I'm going to cut you off there for a second.
Have a little bit of a childhood in Quebec.
Yeah, Like, I'm going to cut you off there for a second, because you've talked about this on the show before and with me personally before, that the Quebec League is somehow a little different than Ontario and the Dub, just in terms of style of hockey, in terms of discipline, in terms of all sorts of different things. The stats that come out of the Q seem to be looked at with a little more of a grain of salt than maybe the O and the Dub. What do you think that is?
Well, I guess the first thing is the Q doesn't draw from as deep a player pool as the other two leagues.
Right.
That's the big thing. I mean, you're drawing from Quebec and the Maritimes, you know, in terms of how many, you know, kids there are.
Sure.
And how many, you know, I mean, they're two areas of Canada that have an older than average population. So there just aren't a lot of as many players. So, I mean, that's people always notice too now, is that, you know, that the depth is a lot different. I mean, people even say from the WHL to the OHL, the depth is different, but in the Q it's definitely like that. So it's always why it's, you know, always had to, you know, really work to compete when it comes to Memorial Cup time and that. And of course the Q doesn't have a US recruiting base. Like the WHL can go all the way down to California and Texas and Colorado. Yeah,
like why don't you explain, because I had no idea. I had to ask you a year or so ago how this works. What is the regions, or how does that work in terms of the WHL, the OHL, and the QMJHL in terms of American draft rights? How does that work?
Yeah, way back when it was completely Wild West. I remember Mike Vellucci, who coached in the OHL for years. He's now the Charlotte Checkers coach in the HL. He told me when he was a player in the early 80s, he got drafted in all three leagues because they could just draft any American kid.
Come on up.
And then eventually, I don't know what was the catalyst for it, or where it started. Like Mike Modano is from Michigan, and he played in the WHL.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
So at some point, they did finally get around to divvying up the territories. But so, like, basically, the WHL has everything from Minnesota all the way to the West Coast, and the OHL has pretty much the whole Midwest. All the way down. I mean, if there's a kid down in Florida, I mean, there are. I mean, Jacob Chychrun, obviously. There's been the odd kid from Florida drafted in the OHL. And the Q basically just gets like a slice of New England where all those kids want to play. They just want to go to play college.
BU and yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to get the kid, you know, someone who's got Boston University, you know, on the phone to, hey, you want to go play in Victoriaville?
Secutomy. Yeah, no, not really. Yeah. Thanks.
And no, not really. I mean, the Moncton and Halifax is, you know, the quote unquote English teams. They've had a little bit of luck,
right?
You know, it's players out of New England. You know, Quebec was, you know, sometimes able to. Gee, I wonder why. But yeah. Oh, come on. No one pays players.
No.
You know, they just want to go where they get to play a lot of games.
Of course,
as everyone one of them says. So that's something else that's probably a factor. So you know, smaller player pool, but I do sort of think like, yeah, I don't think that fast track development is there and is omnipresent in the Maritimes and Quebec as it is in the rest of Canada, which isn't to say that there aren't guys who have, you know, really developed quickly. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon's an obvious one.
Oh, Sidney Crosby's
an obvious one, but then again, they also went out of province for a while to, you know,
St. Mary's or
Shattuck St. Mary's.
Shattuck St. Mary's, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, they both went there before coming back to light up the QMJHL, and then they were, you know, in the NHL as 18-year-olds. So, but yeah, I think that's a general thing. So obviously, that's probably why it's come to this extreme where there's only, you know, say three players from the entire Q selected. But the funny thing is, when Canada's done well in this tournament, they've usually had a strong contingent from the QMJHL. So it'll be interesting to see how.
Well, that is interesting. I wonder if you. As I look around, this looks to be a year, and it kind of fluctuates. I think most of the time when you look at Canadians that are already in the NHL, it's pretty rare that guys get sent back. And even when they do, they're not often all that successful. When you think of Curtis Lazar, he was made captain. He was okay, I guess. Brett Connolly was, you know, came back, but was only, you know, all right. When you look at some of the guys this year in the NHL, I don't see much help coming. There's Tyson Jost in Colorado. He's not coming back. Samuel Girard, I think if he had stayed in Nashville as kind of a depth guy and a minor league guy, maybe had a chance of coming back. But since he's been traded to Colorado, he's kind of playing in their top four. Victor Mete, same thing, has been eating up great minutes for Montreal. And had they stayed on the downswing, maybe they would have parachuted him out. But they're kind of rebounding now. I don't see a lot of help coming from the NHL at this point this year. Do you?
No, you sort of rattled them all off. Yeah, Girard has obviously been the biggest surprise to me. I thought, you know, okay, it was weird that a guy got traded while he was still inside of the, you know, the nine game.
Yeah, that was
nine game limit. But then when he went to Colorado, I just assumed, okay, he'll automatically be in their top four because I can't name more than two defensemen on that team.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to play for the Colorado Avalanche? Well, okay.
Rob and I talked when we did our season preview, and I don't want to get off on a whole thing here, but when we did the season preview show for that division, they only had three defensemen under contract, three NHL defensemen. Like, they needed bodies, and now that he's been traded there, I think they're going to keep him.
They are the NHL's lol cow right now, aren't they? I mean, I barely follow the NHL. It's...
That's why I come to you, man. You're a junior hockey guy. I love that.
Yeah, I keep tabs on everything else. I mean, I watch the odd game. And,
sure.
But, you know, here and there. I love watching the Jets these days.
Oh, they've been killing it.
Yeah, and then they go in and, like, lose to Detroit.
Yeah, shit the bed against Detroit, but, you know, it happens.
Yeah, Girard's probably the surprise, among those guys. Like, but yeah, Mete, now that I guess the Habs are winning, it's probably unlikely. But we'll see. I mean, there's still a couple weeks to go. And I guess the old thing is when the tournament's in North America, you know, teams are
less reluctant to let someone... and it's not a lot of travel. Maybe, you know, we'll lend you the guy. Now, the NHL's roster freeze is different than the IIHF. Have to have your... I think the NHL roster freezes the 19th, whereas in the IIHF going into this tournament, you don't have to lock in your roster until I think it's like Christmas Day at like maybe midnight on the 25th. Tournament starts on the 26th. But if you're going to get a guy from the NHL, it has to be done before they lock their rosters, I believe, on the 19th. So I don't see a whole lot of help coming from there.
No, and I mean, at the same time, you could also say, well, you know, Mike McLeod already got sent back, so
yeah,
that was...
No, it's true.
He being the captain of the Mississauga Steelheads.
Yeah.
And their 73 fans were delighted.
Both of our fans are delighted. Oh, these Yankee Doodle Dandies have turned this one into... I can't remember. I've lost my... Hey, you can play center. All right, as we... move along here. I wanted to ask you a little bit about this whole Russian thing has become a debacle as we look at the Russians have been banned from the Olympics, but their athletes can still compete under a certain flag. Putin has said he won't hold Russian athletes back, which I presume means the KHL is going to let their guys go. This thing's kind of a mess. The question I wanted to ask to you was, if Canada is looking for some extra skill, right? Like really top end guys that could put the puck in the net on the power play. You might be looking at junior hockey because the guys you're going to pull out of Russia or Switzerland or Germany or whatever are good players. You're actually looking at some pretty recognizable names that used to play in the NHL. But in terms of finishers, top end skill probably isn't there, or they would still be getting chances in the NHL. If you're an owner of a CHL team and you're looking at lending a guy already for 3 weeks to a month to Hockey Canada for the World Juniors, you can't be all that excited about lending your same top guy back to Hockey Canada again for another 3 weeks to a month to the Olympic team in February, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I was sort of looking at this. I see a quote. Like Bruce Hamilton, who runs the Kelowna Rockets in the WHL, I mean, everyone knows he's kind of like the shadow commissioner of the WHL.
Okay.
he's the person who's got the most influence and's kind of got the most sway and, you know, and looks out for what's I mean, and he's a great guy. I'm not saying this. I mean,
well, it's a model franchise.
That's the phrase everyone throws around with Jerry Jones, but it's not like a Jerry Jones.
Okay.
He's just a guy who's got a lot of pull and runs one of the most successful franchises.
Right.
And he's sort of said there, he's like, well, and he's been quoted saying, you know, well, we've had these guys with us since they were 15. At some point, their obligation is to our team.
Right.
I mean, everyone, obviously, you know, the part of the deal is, you know, that you do bit of due, you know, you release your players in December for the World Junior, because everyone sort of realized that's probably over the years been a great benefit to the CHL, not just, you know, raising profile up. There is a symbiotic relationship there, but in this case, there really isn't, because it might only be.
Oh, there's no return on the Olympics. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no return on the Olympics. And it's, I mean, no one's going to know that. You're asking for a player who's, you know, no one's going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to go, you know, go watch the, you know, an OHL game because that one guy, that's just not going to happen.
Well, especially since he might be gone.
Like, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
I heard that Jordan Kyrou's pretty good. Yeah, he's in Korea.
It might be interesting if someone asked about an overage player. Maybe that would be a little bit different, but
that's not what I expect to see, right? Like, to you, like, to me, they're going to look at Jordan Kyrou, right, who, you know, might be able to play on the top power play for Canada, even if he's the 13th forward and they don't trust him defensively necessarily at that level, right? Like, to me, you're not, yeah, if you're trying to advertise, hey, Jordan Kyrou was awesome at the World Juniors, come watch him, but you better do it in the next 3 weeks because then he's gone again, right? Like, to me, that's a tough pill to swallow. If I own a CHL team, I'm going to give this guy up twice.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think teams are comfortable with it, but I mean, I think.
Do you think you'll see it? It's tough. It's a big ask.
I feel like it's all like the big die that has to be cast is Russia going to say the KHL guys can't come? I think if that let me throw it out there this way. If that happens, then I think the CHL would look at letting people go, because at that point, you know, the stock is starting to get drawn way down, and, you know, the whole, you know, king and country thing will kick in at that point. Right.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it is too much to ask. I mean, you got these 18 and 19 year old kids playing 90 games a year if their team goes deep into the playoffs, and, you know, to play two really.
Well, and you probably have a better handle on this than me. It's Regina hosting the Memorial Cup, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're hosting it.
Who's their big guy? Who's
their big guy? Sam Steele has been.
Sam Steele.
He's a sure thing for Team Canada.
Yeah, and
he's also, and I mean, he's going to have to play three of these things in a year. I mean, that's too much.
And the question becomes: is that he's also one of those guys that Hockey Canada might ask for to run a power play, right? That at the Olympics, not the World Juniors. So he disappears from Regina for at least 3 weeks here in December through January to run the World Juniors. He comes back to Regina, plays another couple weeks. Then you want him to fly to Korea, which is like a billion time zones from here, play another bunch of games, and then come back. And then again, hopefully, run through the WHL playoffs, because you don't want to back in, win that, and then play the Memorial Cup, which is going to run through late May. And he's a teenager. Like, it's a ton to ask, not just of the kid, but of the guy who is running the team that's trying to make money off his, you know, off his back. And I got my own feelings on how much I give a shit about the profit margins of people running supposedly amateur franchises, not paying players and making money. But I do understand it's a business, and it's a big ask. It really is.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, there's got to be 23 decent guys in their 20s playing in other leagues other than, but again, I mean, I guess the AHL is already out, and if you're under NHL contract,
yeah.
There's got to be, you can definitely can find
for a tournament somewhere that says it's supposed to be faster, stronger, higher. This might be the worst hockey tournament you've ever seen at the Olympics. Like, this could be terrible.
It could be. I guess you really want to take a long term view. I mean, it couldn't be worse than when Canada used to beat teams, 28-0.
Yeah, back in the '40s, and we were sending the, teams from Whitby and whatever.
We literally just sent a senior team over with, they pick up a couple of guys along the way and
take that, Poland, or whatever might be happening, right? Yeah. No.
Yeah. But yeah. So I mean, and everything's definitely in uncharted territory. I would just think that the simplest way to look at it is, let's see what happens with the KHL, and then after that we'll figure out whether major junior players are summoned. I mean, it is such a mess. I didn't have a problem with the NHL saying no, because I mean, at the end of the day, the IOC was expecting to use the NHL's labor for free.
Yep.
Because the IOC never pays for anything.
But I kind of hate both those organizations. $1,400
hotel suites don't pay for themselves, I guess. So you can't really pay anyone else.
The IOC sucks, and the NHL sucks. And the
scan blows up, and you and Amy have been all over that. So
yeah, no, it's a mess. And like, imagine now if the NHL was going and all of a sudden you're going, yeah, Crosby's going to be there. And yeah, Kessel's going to be there. And yeah, Oliver Ekman-Larsson's going to be there. But not Malkin and Ovechkin, and not what a can of worms that would have been, and what a bullet they may have dodged there in terms of, why aren't those guys going?
There still will be a hockey team with Russian players on it.
I do too.
They'll just compete as an independent.
Yep. I agree.
Hopefully, like Notre Dame in football, they'll disappoint hugely. I'm just saying that because I hope Sean Fitzgerald listens to the podcast, because he's the biggest Notre Dame fan in Canadian sports media.
It's true. His Twitter is always so sad on those days.
Well, I got him really good. I got to tell this story.
Sure.
Yeah. So now I have to go wait. Now, obviously, where I grew up, in Bath.
Sure. Just outside of Kingston.
Yeah, for those of you who need the geographical
reference. I think most people do. Not everybody's up on their Bath.
So we always... I don't know. How do I tell the story? So basically, there was one family we knew in the neighborhood, and the dad was they were, very friendly, super perky, super Christian types. And
super
dad
perky.
Was such a ringer for Ned Flanders that it wasn't even fun. He had the glasses, the mustache, the sort of syrupy voice. And he always was a guy, he lifted weights, so he was like just ripped like Flanders is.
Stupid, sexy Flanders.
Yeah, it feels like I'm wearing nothing at all. Nothing at all. Anyway, so their daughter actually went to row for the University of Tulsa. So, one Saturday afternoon in 2010, I'm home and Notre Dame is playing Tulsa's football team. Now, Tulsa is like this one of the smallest schools that plays in the top division in the in college football. Like, it's a school with 3,000 students that somehow manages to play major college football. So, of course, Notre Dame invites them in to slaughter them. And of course, in the last minute of the game, Notre Dame is somehow behind. And they're down by 1 point, driving for the go-ahead score. So it's okay, you're in field goal range. Just don't screw this up. Don't do something stupid like throw the ball in the end zone and get it intercepted, which is automatic, of course, what happens.
Obviously.
What's the name of the Tulsa defensive back who makes the interception?
Flanders. Of course it's Flanders. Please say it's Flanders.
Yeah. And anyway, there was a guy from Ottawa on Tulsa that year.
There always is.
Yeah. Weird recruiting pipeline. Tyler Holmes, who's now one of the starting guards for the Argos.
Ooh.
So I was thinking that scenario. You had a sure field goal in your pocket, and you threw an interception in the end zone.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, sounds like how the Grey Cup played out. So I tweeted Sean, hey, did you get to ask Tyler Holmes that reminded him of when he was on Tulsa and they beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame 2010? If I can make a living off these really specific trolls.
Yeah, honestly, man, your predictions are so obscure.
Sean liked the tweet, so he wasn't too mad.
No, Sean's a good guy, he seems like, right? So
yeah, I doubt he's ever going to hear this, but anyway.
You never know. Yes. You might be an avid listener. We don't know, right? It's
he's a busy man.
Of course. Currently writing for The Athletic. I'm a fan. If you'd like to check that out, you should do so. I can't offer you any kind of discount or anything, but head over. If you send at Myrtle a tweet, he's usually willing to give a discount if you want to check out The Athletic. Yeah, you know what? To me, it's an interesting time of year. World Juniors is always fascinating to me. I'm one of those guys who rushes in, pretends to be an expert on junior hockey, and starts to bother Nate. And now with the Olympic thing, this could be fascinating for quite a while. So we'll see how that pans out. Anything else on the roster that's going to come to camp here for Team Canada? Where are they? I think they're in St. Catharines for the camp. Any other thoughts, or are you ready to wrap this one up there, bud?
Well, I have a few, obviously. Sure. Eager to see what kind of impact Cale Makar has. Avalanche pick. After we just, like,
roasted them.
Yeah, at least they made a smart first-round pick.
Yeah, usually what it means when you're terrible is you get to draft some good players, right? So.
Well, there were people who weren't sold. I mean, there was, but as always with offensive defensemen, the opinions tend to go all over the map.
That's true.
He was so dominant in Fort McMurray, with the Brooks Bandits. I said Fort McMurray is one of my good friends, Tyler King,
yep.
Another bat guy, is the play-by-play guy for the Brooks Bandits. So he was telling me all about Cale Makar for the last 2 years. And I mean, he just dominated in Junior A, which you really don't
see. I'll have to pull out my Brooks Bandits jersey I've got stowed around here somewhere.
You got sweet colors.
Yeah, all right.
I got it's sort of nice, like that Columbus Navy, but it's a nicer shade of red to go with it.
Okay.
If you're a uniform nerd.
Sure, I could get into that.
We'll see. So you're interested to see how he fits in. I mean, you could have two NCAA guys on the defense because Dante Fabro.
Yeah, he for sure. He's a lock. You got to.
He's a lock. So it could be really.
Did you happen to catch the TSN World Junior preview thing they did Monday night?
No, I didn't. I was watching Monday Night Football because I like to actually watch games.
You know what? As always, I dig Craig Button. I think more than most people do. I think he does a nice job in teeing things up. Obviously, everybody likes Bob McKenzie and James Duthie. He's a good host. They had Dante Fabro on. Kid might be the most dull athlete you've ever spoken to in your life. I don't really care. I'm not one of those guys. As long as you get it done on the ice, that's all great. But kid could not have possibly cared less about being on television answering stupid questions that, you know, they're going to ask you. It could not have been any more boring to talk to this guy. And I mean, hell of a hockey player, but oh my God, it was a dull interview. He's like, hey, what about that time that they were ripping you on TV? You know, Dylan Strome was talking about how big your head was in this feature we did. Well, Dylan was a good leader, and, you know, I do kind of have a big head, so I guess it's all right, this is going nowhere. Let's carry on, buddy.
Yeah, I'm not going to say who said it about whom, but I just remember once when I was covering one of these things, walking away from the scrum, and someone just mutters, the next interesting thing that guy says will be the first.
John Tavares.
It wasn't Tavares, but it was. Oh, there's a great quote about Tavares from the player was Chris. You remember Chris DiDomenico, obviously.
Current Ottawa Senator,
because yeah. Everyone gets a chance to play for the Senators for a year.
Yep.
They'll take anyone. DiDomenico was on the team in 2009,
yep.
Won gold medal in Ottawa. And after he came back to St. John, I think he played, I can't remember if he played for St. John or Moncton. Let's just say he played for St. John.
Sure.
So he was asked, what's it like? What do you think of Tavares? Oh, yeah, he's amazing. I think he'll go number one, if not higher.
Ooh, higher than one. Well, that's big talk.
And that's another thing where the whole, I don't know. We've got to find some sort of word for it, but just with the way the hockey world's just gotten insane with just being over the top about everything now.
Oh, it's insane.
The green room at the draft.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. Come out, pick your own hat before you walk up to the... Ugh.
And the hats are always ugly.
Of course they are.
What was so bad about the fact the guy would be in the stands and...
It was amazing. Sitting with his family... That was half the beauty.
shake hands with your dad and then walk down. I mean, was the draft going over time just because it took longer to walk down from the stands?
I think this is one of those things you would agree with me on, that while the NHL tends to bungle everything, they probably did the best draft show. Like, they nailed that.
NFL draft coverage, basically, right? Isn't it?
I think the NHL kind of led the way on that a little bit, right? And had those kids sitting there with their families, brought them up, put the hat and the jersey on, all that shit.
Yeah, it was something that was. Yeah, you're actually right on that. I mean, it was something completely organic.
I can't hear that enough. Oh, you're actually right.
Well, you're never going to hear it from Rob, right?
That's true.
Captain Blowhard never.
No, it's true.
But yeah, it was. I mean, they held it. You know, held it in an arena or any. I mean, I guess I don't think they ever charged. The early days, they probably never charged admission. Anyone could just walk in and watch, right?
Yep.
And it was anyone, and you could just be there. And I mean, a player had the choice of whether to go or whether to stay home. A lot of guys, if they're not going in the top three rounds, don't come. There's a bit of a trade show thing around when the people were in the hockey industry and making contacts. It was their own thing. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, whereas you're right. I mean, the NFL draft and the NBA draft. I mean, that's TV came to them with those things.
Well, NBA is the worst. Well, actually, MLB probably because they just don't really do much. But NBA, where the commissioner comes up and tells you what each team has done, and that's shit, right? Like, it's between the NHL and the NFL, and it's just fun. To me, that's so hot.
I wish the NHL could get the second day of the draft on TV at least, but
it's normally on like Sportsnet 9 or whatever might be happening, and they pick up a web stream somewhere on Facebook Live and run that on TV. It's awful usually.
I'll always remember being at the draft, I think in 2013, and Anthony Duclair had been drafted by the Rangers.
Yeah.
And there was all these, you know, and you talk about, you know, all the NHL guys trying to, you know, act like they know a little bit junior. They're all crowding around him. And one New York guy, so I'd written on his pad, Subban. He thought it was Jordan Subban.
Oh, that's not, you know what? I'm just going to leave it alone, but we all know what that might be.
Yeah, Jordan. Break. And I was just kind of like, I was like, come on, one's a right shot D and the other's a left shot winger. But there would also been like a break. I think there had been some sort of short where they usually have a tote board back there that will tell you who's at each little like podium. So the rounds go so fast. But yeah, Duclair had gone something like 80th and Subban had gone like 116th or something.
Do you remember, it was only a year or two ago, and I can't remember, I think it was an Ottawa draft pick, which made my day, because fuck Ottawa. It was maybe either Logan Brown, it wouldn't have been Thomas Chabot, it must have been Logan Brown, and they zoom in, it was when the draft was in Chicago, and Jonathan Toews is looking at Patrick Kane and goes, as Ottawa's being that kid looks like an asshole. And they've got it picked up perfectly on his face. You can easily read his lips. You can easily hear him as Otto was making their pick. And it was just because Chicago had just been up there to make their pick. So Toews was around. I think he went up with them and Kane to make the pick. But afterwards, when Otto was making their pick, you can see Toews. That kid looks like an asshole. It was one of the Ottawa picks anyway. I can't remember.
Yeah, and they had like a couple first rounders in that year.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it might have been Colin White, might have been Logan Pratt. Like, I can't remember.
I'm going to go say it was Colin White just because he's an NCAA player. Because
he looks like an asshole. So, yeah, no, it's true, man.
The only one of those guys I ever interviewed in person was Thomas Chabot, and he was nice. So
Chabot dominated the tournament, man. Dominated.
Yeah, we have nothing. Big fans of Thomas Chabot, and very soon he'll be the Senators franchise defenseman once Carlson
leaves. You know, when he and Drew Doughty are the top pair for Toronto in 2 years. Our boy David Foote's getting a good look down at Belleville at Thomas Chabot. You can follow him on Twitter at Footy on the Air, and he's all over the Belleville Senators if you're interested in how that development curve is going. You know what, Matt? This is my favorite time of the year. Might be your least favorite time of the year as people like me start to barge in. And
oh, no, no. I mean, I'm just, you know, now I'm just enjoying the enjoyment.
Yeah, enjoying mocking people like me who all the, hey, that guy that Nate's known is good for a year and a half, I now know is good. It's kind of how this thing goes.
The only downside now is that Canada actually tries to, you know, focus on skill and speeds, so they don't ever take a guy like Zach Cassian and hope he kills somebody.
I was kind of hoping that they might be interested in Matt Martin. That would be awesome because I could stand to have him out of my team's lineup for a little while. But no, you're right. There was always kind of that Brian Burke style. Hey, let's build a, yeah, how about you just try to outskill everyone instead, right? Which would be awesome. So,
or let's take the guy who has like 10 points this year because he's great on the penalty kill.
Yeah, exactly. The Rob Zaminer of this year's World Junior team. Yeah, you know what? It's always interesting. There's always one of those guys. I was an Oshawa Generals fan, still am, when they took Boone Jenner, who probably had no business being there other than the fact that he would block shots and kill penalties.
And he played twice, I think.
Yep, I think you're right. But there's always that thing where let's try and build an NHL team instead of just let's build the most skilled possible team we could. And
yeah, take the talent and then figure out who's good, who. I mean, players now are, I think, so focused on being, you know, that, you know, ever since Mike Babcock came up with 200-foot game, everyone kind of wants to do that now, right? So
yeah, it's true.
It's bring back the days when Mario Lemieux would tell his junior coach, "I can't play defense because I always have the puck."
Isn't that a shame? Let's wrap this one up. That is Tall Can Sports. You can follow. Hey, before I wrap this one up, what's coming up on the Sports Lit podcast?
Well, I mean, we don't want to tip off too much.
All right.
Because someone like, you know, since we do that, someone's going to cancel on us. But yeah, I even got to mention Sports Lit much.
Not once on this show, man. Not once on this episode.
Well, I mean, we plan to make our shows evergreen, but we do have a couple of people lined up this month. I guess I'll do one name drop and hope that Neil doesn't wring my neck for it. yeah, Stacey May Fowles is, you know, obviously a published novelist.
Wow, and also, yeah.
I guess co-curated the best Canadian sports writing anthology that it was released, I think, about a year ago. So we're going to have her on to talk about that and other things. So far, of course, we've put two episodes up. The first one was Ken Reed on his book project with Dennis Marouk, The Forgotten
Story. Fantastic. That was a great listen.
Yeah, no, that was a you know, we could have gotten a better guy to hear
to lead it off. Yeah,
and then our second one was with Greg Oliver about his book Gratuny the Loony, which, you know, the chronicle of
that was
interesting. Greg wrote us, and we can't thank Greg enough. He wrote this blog on Slam Sports about the pod, so to promote it. So that was completely unexpected and you know, really awesome of him to do that. And he also talked a little bit about his biography of Father David Bauer, who was, you know, the creator when Canada had a standing national team program. Yeah. So if you see that book around, it's an interesting read. I guess it's really topical now because
we're back
an NHLer free Olympic hockey tournament.
Yeah.
Because that book covers the days when that was the reality, when people never saw the day when NHL guys were going to be playing in the Olympics.
Oh, absolutely. I've really enjoyed the early episodes. So you people, you can search Sports Lit Pod on your favorite podcast app or on iTunes if you're an Apple person, or follow them at Sports Lit Pod on Twitter. Man, it's been fun so far, man. I've enjoyed both shows. And like you said, Ken Reed to lead it off and Stacey Mayflower's coming. That's going to be awesome. I had no idea that was. I just threw a line in the water and hoped you'd throw us a line here, man. That sounds like a lot of fun. I can't wait for that because, you know, it's a great follow on Twitter as well. If you people aren't you know, that should be a lot of fun. Anything else you want to tee up before we get out of here?
Well, that about covers it. I mean, obviously, I'm still chipping in here and there at Sportsnet. I think I'm like the 11th defenseman on their roster of CHL writers, but nevertheless, that's been, you know, enjoyable this year. But I mean, obviously, Sportslet's kind of my public facing
project
these days, but it's something that I guess it's a bit of a, we're focused more, I guess, on the right now and just making sure we get good with the quality, and then we'll build up the quantity as time goes along. But I'm glad that, you know, Neil and I have launched that, and hopefully we'll pick up the pace a little bit more in the new year. Like, I mean, we're both like Luddites technologically, and we also have this whole thing that we want to have read the whole book before we, you know, meet.
What a novel idea. See what I did there?
Not possible
I'm in funny. The world,
you know, daily deadline driven media, but
right.
You know, but it's not like we have a research assistant to do it for us, right? So
no, it's that's true. It's you know, it's one of those things. You know what? You can follow the podcast they're talking about at Sports Lit Pod on Twitter. You can follow Nate on Twitter at N8SAGER. He changes it on me all the time, and I have a hard time keeping it up.
Wait, put a thumb lot in there.
Why not? Some kind of crazy accent. You can follow.
You're the only person who ever gets Sager correct.
Well, I try my best, man. I do my research, but every time I look, it's you got a different address. So it's,
no, you get. I'm just saying it.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. Like, you know, I have a weirdly spelled first name. People know after like the first time. Okay, it's Nate.
Yeah.
But I, to this day, I have people like, I go on to do a media hit, and it's like, we have Nate Sager joining us, and I'm like, I'm not some 70s
it's
arena.
Bob Sager. Yeah.
I'm a meaty-breasted little nothing. Those are sports.
No, it's true. So you can follow him, like I said, at NAsager, S-A-G-E-R. You can follow us on Twitter, at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. Visit the website, TallCanAudio.com, and support the show, Patreon.com/TallCanAudio. We've got some new stuff up there for our patrons. Nate, appreciate this, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Matt. You're welcome.
And we'll see you all on the next one.
Well, this one's empty. For more, visit TallCanAudio.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at TallCanAudio.